Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. Beyond the Darkness is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Today I'm joined by Ron Moorhead, best known for the Sierra Sounds. Ron is an adventurous researcher, author, and producer. He's been known for decades for his worldwide research into the Bigfoot and Sasquatch phenomenon. The Sierra Sounds are the only Bigfoot recordings that have been scientifically studied, time-tested, and accredited as being genuine. Ron has documented his personal interactions with these gentle giant beings and produced his story on CD and in his book, Voices in the Wilderness, which he joined us about 3 years ago to share. Very few researchers of his caliber are brave enough to publicly consider the hundreds of reports that include that spooky action at a distance, Einstein's work, in his new book, The Quantum Bigfoot. Ron goes above and beyond, combining decades of experience and tireless hours of research into the realm of quantum physics as it could pertain to Bigfoot. Besides being the keynote speaker at many conventions, he's also been featured on countless radio programs like Coast to Coast AM, BBC TV documentaries, and The Learning Channel. We'll have a link up for Ron's website as well, so you can find it there. He also has downloadable versions of his book right on his site. Welcome back to the show, Ron. Great to have you here with us.
Thank you. My pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right. Walk us through, if you would, I know you were with us about 3 years ago. We've changed and we've got quite a substantial audience growing with us constantly. How did you get involved in Bigfoot research?
I was friends with some hunters in the High Sierras of California. They frequented a remote area about 8 miles in the wilderness. And they hunted that area since the 50s. And all of a sudden they started having these things come around, but I was friends with him, but I wasn't a hunter at that time, so I got invited up because one of the guys came out and he didn't want to go up by himself. It scared him quite a bit. The sounds they were making were pretty interesting, to say the least. So anyway, I got involved in the group like that, and that was 1971, and been involved in it ever since. Once this thing gets a hold of you, it just doesn't want to let go.
All right, well, talk to me about the fact with these Sierra recordings. You mentioned that these are some of the most well-documented, researched, and considered credible and genuine. Genuine what? And who was the person or persons that were accrediting them as genuine Bigfoot noises or vocalizations?
Good questions. Yeah, in 1972, one of the Johnson brothers invited a reporter in to document some of the stuff that's going on or try to figure out what was going on because these things would come around our camp every time we'd go in there. And he went up and he established and got some really good recordings himself and had them finally in 1978, I think it was, he got Dr. Curlin from the University of Wyoming to tackle him. Everybody else prior to that was just laughing him off, thinking he was a hoax or something. So Dr. Curlin took him serious and did a year-long study on the sounds to show that they were genuine, they weren't manufactured, they weren't speeded up, they weren't slowed down, they weren't created by another device and brought up there and played through a speaker. None of that happened, according to Professor Curlin, who is electronical. He's an engineer.
Hey, don't get all scientifical on me.
Scientific, there you go. Anyway, he did a full-blown study showing that these sounds were within the human range, but also outside the human range. They can go above what we do and below what we do as humans. And that was quite a little good. It was good for us, good for the sounds anyway, for the study, because Al Berry was trying to get to the bottom of it, whether it was right or wrong. And that was a big plus. So from there, it wasn't until when was it? Scott Nelson, the cryptolinguist, got a hold of it. Oh, by the way, let me back up Dr. Curlin's report. He wrote a paper on it, and it's published in the Man Like Monsters on Trial, the University of BC. He presented that in a symposium up there for Anthropology of the Unknown in British Columbia University in 1978. So up until then, that's all we could get done. We kept contacting other people. Al Berry did, and I got with him. We weren't friends to start with. We were just associates. Then we became good friends later on. Because he was up there, I didn't know, but he was up there going through our backpacks and everything else, looking for who could be hoaxing this thing, because it was pretty pretty unique. And so it wasn't until 2008, till cryptolinguist, retired cryptolinguist from the Navy, with 30 years experience of transcribing languages, heard some of the sounds through the BFRO network. He thought, this sounds like language. So he had to get a hold of us, and he came out all the way from Missouri, where he's teaching foreign languages. And he got the scoop from Al Berry and myself on the context of these sounds, and got the original sounds, and went back and went to study them down. And he transcribed a language, a complex language, out of these sounds. And let me say, language is a unique thing to say, because it's language by the human definition of language. The human definition of language is a morpheme stream which carries a cognitive sentence. And that's what humans have. And supposedly only humans, Homo sapiens sapiens, are made for that. Animals aren't. You know, they can communicate in different ways, but they don't communicate with language as the human definition of language, and that's what it is. These things have a morpheme stream in their sounds. They have they have a language. Of course, we knew they were talking amongst themselves when we were up there. But, you know, until you get somebody like Scott Nelson, and I didn't even know a guy like that existed until he came, sought us out. And until you get somebody like that to say that and do a study on them, nobody gives it any credence. Of course, they gave Dr. Curlin credence, and we talked about that for a long time, but that only goes so far. It talked about the tapes themselves, if they were genuine, if they hadn't been manufactured, played around with, basically. So those are the two people that's really chimed in on it, with the exception of one human sound expert, Nancy Logan, very qualified with only 12 in California. She was one of them. They could speak languages and without an accent. She just had perfect hearing. She chimed in on it in 1990s, late 1990s, I think it was, and said that these things have a language. And she wrote a report on it, and I've got that in my book also.
Okay, anyway, so you've got these beings, these creatures. You're out there. You're hearing the knocks. You're hearing the whoops. You're hearing a language, something spoken between them. When you are hearing this, I mean, talk me through. Do you believe that at that point, when you're hearing massive conversation, are you surrounded by one, two, or do you think there's a whole lot of them around you and surrounding your area that they're chattering back and forth like that?
Yeah, Dave, I think the most I recall having around us at one time were three, and that was because you could hear them from different directions. We had, over the years, we had different sized tracks, so we know there was a family up there of more than three, or else two different families, I'm not sure which. And in fact, the sounds between 1972 that Al Berry recorded, we had studied once in 1974, that I recorded when I had my interaction with them vocally. Up till then, we didn't have much vocal interaction with them, but they were actually trying to say something to us in 1974. And I don't know what it is to this day. I wish I did. But anyway, when we were up there and these things would come around, first they start off with maybe a big limb breaking. And when you're sitting around in your fire talking, reading, or whatever you're doing, this is usually at dusk. So they feel like their safety probably is not being seen. And we all carry guns, too. I might bring that up because people think, we'll never take guns, or you're never going to have anything going on. Well, we had something going on all the time, and we had guns with us. In fact, we, not knowing for sure what these things were up to, we were concerned a little bit about, are we going to make it out of here, or are they going to eat us, carry us away in a sleeping bag, or we have to shoot our way out? What's going to happen? So it wasn't until 74 when we got pretty comfortable with them. That other soundbite I sent you was when I was interacting with them. And we were getting comfortable then, still not knowing what they were, still not sure, but we kept our guard up because you just don't know what they are. You don't know what they're up to.
Now I know
they're very loosey, very stealthy. They're very fast and extremely fast for their size.
Now I know we've got two bits of audio we'll play in a few moments, but talk to me about this. When you say that you were surrounded by three, could you visibly see them, or you could just tell that there were voices or noises coming from three separate directions?
I did physically see one that night, and that's what made that night unique, because I always tell people, well, if you don't see what makes a sound, you don't know what makes a sound. Well, that night, it was a cry like it was coined as a samurai cry, And that one I saw, and he was leaving from one area going down to where the other two were. And the other two, I think, was a female and an adolescent. And I got the adolescent's voice recorded also. So I know there were three different voices. The one voice called the Samurai Cry is the one I saw running through the woods. And it was dark, not dark, but it was moonlight, bright moonlight, 8,400 feet. That's the altitude of our camp. When the moon comes out on a clear night, I'll tell you, it's like you read a newspaper. So it was quite clear that night. I didn't get any facial features, but I certainly seen the movement going through the trees and how fast it was, probably about, 50 to 60 yards away.
And how big would you say that this creature really was?
We think this one had a 22-inch track, so it was probably 9 feet tall. That's just a wild guess. I don't really have any way of telling. But there's tracks all the way from a little 9-inch track we had in the snow with an 18-inch track, which we think was the mother and the adolescent. And then we had the 22-inch track, which was more common. And there was one track we found not in camp, but way out of camp, coming down from towards our camp. But it was a huge track that we didn't talk about for a long time because just too big. That thing had to be a giant. I mean, it was 25 and a half inch track. We followed the tracks. It just went off in this area where we couldn't go anymore. And if I had run across that myself, I don't think I'd have believed it. It was just, people can believe there's an 8 foot, 9 foot tall Bigfoot, but they can't believe there's a 12 or 15 foot tall for some reason.
Well, you know, I mean, the one thing to keep in mind, having just watched the documentary on Andre the Giant, Andre, I think, was 7 foot four, and he wore a size 25. So, you know, I mean, I know exponentially you think, okay, 24, 25 foot or 24 to 25 inch would probably make a much taller, like a 10 to 12 foot creature, but it could be that it's just a bigger hulking, creature that has large feet, you know, still fitting in the Bigfoot category. Not that 7 foot four is not a little fella. I mean, certainly, he played Bigfoot for a reason in the $6 Million Man TV show, but, seeing things, I mean, you know, when you start talking to people that think that these creatures could be in excess of 12 feet, does it ever kind of make you sit back and think, that's too large to remain hidden for this many years? You know, maybe the 8 to 9 foot I could swallow, but anything above that just seems like it would be something that would be seen a lot more.
You know, Dave, it had a 13 foot stride, so let me throw that in there.
Holy mackerel.
It was running. So that kind of tells you something different, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a big foot. It was a huge foot and a huge creature, whatever it was. And this is the one we call the granddaddy because he really never came in close to camp. We think he was we don't know what he was, but he was big, that's for sure.
Now, when you've been out there, have you ever felt fear that you were maybe pissing it off, that it was being angry or aggressive towards you?
The human sound experts had listened to it before. There was some aggressive sounds, and we really thought they might have been directed at us. That's why we carry guns all the time. But they may have been directed at another creature up there because we generally left food out for them, and they would come in later and take it. And that's when you'd hear them making their sounds really like they were fighting over the food, beating their chest, what have you. We kind of sensed some fear to start with because you still got the unknown. But after a while, we got kind of complacent with it because we realized they weren't trying to come in and do anything. They weren't throwing rocks at us or trying to intimidate us any way other than their sounds. And so we kind of got complacent and relaxed with it a little bit. And that's what you hear in my 1974 recordings is, we was outside the shelter, which normally they didn't come around till we were inside this shelter, like a beaver's nest. You couldn't see out, and they'd have to come through a rock, or not a rock wall, but a timbered wall. We had a cable stretched around these trees, and they would lean this deadfall up against the cables, a lot of them, and it looked like a big beaver's nest. And across the top, we stepped cables and put lumber up there, deadfall, and then put alder brush over that. So it's kind of between two trees, which are kind of on a slant, was our doorway, and we could go in and out the doorway. with the movement of log, which we closed between the trees. I'm rambling on, so I get too carried away.
Please, that's why we have you on the show. I want to hear your stories and what you're experiencing.
Except before, they actually did all these interactions when we were outside by the stove. Me and one other guy, we packed in with the horses and mules and packed in supplies to resupply the camp. And we were there that night. I know, and I wrote about this in my first book, Voices in the Wilderness, how they knew where we were going, they knew who we were and where we were going before we ever got there, because we had found signs of they confirmed that to us the next day. So anyway, I got pretty comfortable and started yelling back at them, and they started yelling back at me. I think the big male, the one, the samurai cry, was trying to tell the other two, this is just speculation on my part, but was trying to tell the other two not to get so close. And it might have been the adolescent that was curious, just trying to get too close. Because you hear the mother, or the one of them, coming down on the small one with a big voice, like, don't do that. I mean, you don't know what it is. You can just sense the...
Let's play this aggressive piece. Now, when did you get this piece of audio, the aggressive growling?
1972.
And can you give us an idea of where around you were that you were able to get this?
We were in the shelter. There were micros loaded up above the shelter on a little pine tree, a little sibling pine, and it was pointed actually up and down the stereo mic. We didn't know that at the time. We found that out later when we had the tapes done, that the stereo mic was upside down. In other words, wasn't right or left, it was top or bottom.
Okay. So,
but it was about 40 feet above the shelter, and this is where we got the sounds. And we got a lot of sounds that night. We got hours of these sounds. All of us were recording by then, and we were just getting kind of having fun with it, basically.
But you start to hear this. I mean, you're out there having fun, you know, to kind of be in hopes of finding this mythological creature is one thing. But then to start hearing the sounds, let me play the audio, and then we'll talk about that. So here is this aggressive piece of audio that you sent to me. So,
I might say that was not language. That was just
right. That was just
type. We got chattering in a lot of it, and where they're chattering back and forth, and that's what the cryptolinguists mainly looked at. This here was just kind of a display.
And you're hearing this. It sounds like it's really close to wherever you're set up recording.
Oh yeah.
Is that unnerving? I mean, you know, to kind of be out there, you know, seeking something like this, but then to actually get a confirmation and hear something which sounds menacing, large, and close by. Talk us through that.
Yeah. Well, let me back up just a tad here. We weren't looking for Bigfoot. Bigfoot was not part of what this hunting group was about. It was just a really nice, pristine wilderness area that nobody visited, nobody went to, 8 miles into the very imposing wilderness. So these things started coming around, and yeah, you get a little unnerved to start with when you hear this type of stuff, because again, you don't know what the intention is behind these sounds.
Well, why did you bring a recording device if you weren't out trying to find this?
Well, the first time around, you didn't have recording devices. Like I say, this wasn't a one-time deal. This went on for years, and it would go on almost every time you'd go up, you'd have these things come around and playing with you, or doing something with you. So we started taking recorders out because we wanted to record it. Now Barry, again, took a little Sony tape recorder. We was using cassette recorders, all of us were. And so we recorded quite a few of these sounds, but we were not looking for Bigfoot. Now when I started going back up there, I started hunting with the guys. My main reason for being up there was this was exciting.
Sure.
The best for just exciting, whatever it was exciting. And so we started recording and setting up all kinds of our recorders, trying to get the best we could get.
All right, now the second piece, this is more of the samurai chatter, the conversation you're hearing between a couple of these creatures.
Yeah, this is 2 years after the other song that you heard. It's And it's basically, I think the same was trying to say something. It was saying something directed at me, and I answered it back. And I just, anyway, that's the night I got to see one. Wow, they're so fast.
All right, so, all right, we're going to play this audio, and part of it is the Beast, part of it is you.
Right.
Okay, here we go. So you're hearing this thing chatting back and forth with you, and all you're doing is mirroring, right? If it's going, oh, whoa, you just cry back, oh, whoa.
I was trying to mimic them, and I think they got a kick out of that because they were really thinking I would, I don't know what they were thinking. But it was an exciting night.
In Bigfoot language, they were yelling, do you have a small penis? And you were answering in the affirmative. You do know that, Ron, don't you? And then they're all laughing around the campfire themselves that night.
You'll never hear the original tape off that. Because this went over quite a while, and
That's crazy. And they are very... that samurai chatter kind of is a good term for it because it almost does have that kind of Japanese sound to the language that was going on in the background.
Yes.
Has there been any work done, any study on older dialects of like a Japanese language to see Scott if Nelson. Any of this fits in?
Yeah, Scott Nelson, the cryptolinguist who teaches in Missouri, he had a professor next to him who was Japanese. And he listened to him. He said, that sounds very Japanese-like. And it's I don't know what word he used, but there was a, he agrees there's an Asian fling to it of some type. Matt Moneymaker, who some of you have heard of, he's the BFR on that Finding Bigfoot episode, but he started the BFO after he heard my sounds in 1995, I think it was, and he's the one that coined the samurai cry. When he heard that, he said, that sounds like a samurai. So that's where it got to be the samurai cry, and that's carried on through to this day.
When you're talking to them and you're trying to repeat, I know a lot of people will go out and do wood knockings, and they'll bang the trees and try to respond back and forth. When you're doing this and you're vocalizing, you said that they almost seem to get a kick out of the fact that you're trying to imitate them, and they'll keep barking back to you. Mm-hmm. And you said, how long did this original full recording go on for?
That one night? I went on for over an hour that night. And then the next night they started up again, but a couple of the other guys that came in, and one of the guys, Lewis Johnson, got pretty, he was just getting kind of fed up. He was there to hunt. Now, this didn't mean a thing to him, Bigfoot thing. None of these things are out there. I'll shoot one if I can see one. But he got up and got his rifle and said, I got to find out what these things are all about. And as soon as that happened, everything stopped. For the whole weekend, nothing else happened. It's like getting rid of him. Because his intention was to shoot whatever he could see. And anyway, they left. So I don't know where to go from there other than, they're still around. I was up there 2 years ago and some strange things happened, but it wasn't necessarily Bigfoot, but I think it was. It was we've had some strange things go on up there besides the Bigfoot.
Well, talk to me real quickly. Talk to me about the fact when you're out there, you guys have your sidearms just in case you've got something with you. What was ever the plan if things went horrible or one did come at you, what was the game plan? Were you guys planning on taking one down if the need be?
Yeah. Yeah, we would have shot it. But that's only if it came at us. We wasn't going to just go out and try to hunt them. That's not what we expect. If I'd have seen one out in the woods in the daytime, like we always looking, I don't think I would have shot at it. No, that wasn't ever my intention to do that. Because whatever they are, they're pretty unique, and you don't just kill something because you don't understand it. You try to understand it. I do, anyway. And so
right. All right, so that's, pretty remarkable. And you're in this area. You said it was very active for a number of years, and then it just seemed to quiet down. Do you have any idea why? Was there more encroachment of people in that area? Why do you believe that was going on?
There wasn't any more encroachment. People just don't want to go back in there. But I think in 1976, this has been going on for 5 years, so we had to shoot a bear right there in our camp who was messing up taking our food and tearing our sack. And prior to that, about midnight it was, I think a Bigfoot was screaming out up above our shelter. At the same time, this bear was, we didn't know it was a bear at the time because we hadn't looked out the shelter. Something was tearing up our stuff, and so we thought we better look out and see what that is. If it's Bigfoot, then they can have it, but if it isn't, it's... Anyway, the horses were pounding and the mules were stomping, and you know how that goes when there's a bear around, but when Bigfoot's around, these things, the horses didn't do that. They were just kind of froze and just looking towards the sound. But it was a bear, and we ran out, ran it off. This was at midnight, and we had our guns with us. And shoot it off, and it circled, we went back in, it circled around, and came back in again. And so went out again and did the same thing again, just screamed out, because black bears are pretty shy, and they're not aggressive at all normally. Third time around, he came back, we went out with our loaded guns again, and this time he didn't circle the camp. He just went out about 20 feet away and turned around and looked at us and stood up. That's when he looked pretty big. And he dropped down and was coming towards us when we quit shooting. So next morning, we skinned him out and we ate his hindquarters and de-pitted his back straps or whatever. And it really was freaky when you see a bear skinned out. It looks like a person. It seems like that was the last time the close-in stuff really happened, the close-in vocalizations, and that's when it kind of stopped. Now, there's still signs of them, and there were signs of them for years after that, and a couple glimpses, actually. My daughter saw one up there in 95, 96 right there, and so they were still around, but they wouldn't come in and interact with us like they used to. And we think it might have been, I'm just guessing at this, but it might have been because we shot the bear.
Oh, suddenly you became more of a threat. They realized that you weren't just passive creatures.
But I know they know what our guns did because we shot deer and hang them up, and sometimes they come and even move the deer, but they never took our deer. We don't, there's a lot that we don't know. There's more things I think I do know now in retrospect of what was going on, but I certainly didn't know it then.
Do you believe that these creatures, and I want to get into the quantum Bigfoot story as we come back after the break, but I'm curious, do you believe that these creatures live in rather large packs, or are they small family units, you know, like five, maybe up to five or six that'll travel together?
I think they're small family units. They've been seen generally three, four at a time when you see them. If they're not a single one. The reports, I've been interviewing people for 45 years now, and yeah, the ones that are seen in groups are generally three or four. Yeah. So I think they're family oriented. They travel in families and they probably get together. And sometimes you hear these cries or yells that people report. And I think that maybe a young male looking for another family group to team up with for mating purposes, or it may be a mother trying to find her young. Who knows what the yells are all about? But I don't go around beating on trees. I don't go around screaming or yelling or whooping. You can do it a couple times just to mock your presence so they, in case they didn't know you was there, they would know you was there. But anyway.
Those are some good, helpful tips. Yeah, let them know that you're in the area and then stop. Don't become an annoyance to them.
They won't mess with you. If they don't think they've got your attention, you know, when you're sitting around camp and you hear a big wood crock or a big wood knock or something like that, or a big limb break, I suggest people just being still. Don't get up and shine a flashlight. Don't do that stuff because that gets rid of them real quick. They will come closer if they don't think, and that's what happened that night in 74, the recording you just heard, is that we heard the limb break, we heard rock clocking together rhythmically. and we heard the limbs breaking and things like that would go on. And I think they were trying to see what we would do, me and this other guy. And we didn't do anything because we learned you just be still, let them come in. And they'd come in closer and closer. And if that's what you want, some people don't, they think they do, but when it comes right down to it, they want to get out of there. There's no getting out of there once it gets dark. It's kind of spooky.
Now, Ron, you've been doing this for a large portion of your life. How many total would you say you've seen Bigfoot?
I mean, if I've seen personally, just the one that night.
What keeps you going back then, knowing that there's only, you know, you've only seen one from all these years, only one? Why do you keep, or, you know, what kept your interest in going back out?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when something like this happens to you up there, you got to, I don't know, it's human nature, I guess, to explore this stuff. Now, I say I only seen one. I think I seen two others one time together when I was flying my plane. I'm a pilot. And I was flying back to Mariposa where I lived. And I was flying over west of Lake Tahoe. And I seen these two dark images walking up this old fire road. And I noticed they didn't have backpacks on. They were just brown. And I kicked myself right and left for not slowing down and circling them and saying, but I think they were, because they were huge. If I remember correctly, they had to be bigger than a human. So I may have seen those. I mean, I did see those, but I don't know what they were for sure. I was cooling my engines off. As I was descending, and I didn't want to, I just didn't. I should have, but anyway, there's those. I don't tell too many people about that because it's embarrassing.
No, but sometimes you see something. I mean, we've all done it where we've seen something bizarre and we drive by it or we walk by it, and then a few minutes later it kind of registers and we're like, wait, what the hell did I just see? And you might turn back around and go look, and you just can't find what you were looking at. But I think that's a natural part of us, where our brains are always trying to make logical sense of the strange surroundings and situations that we have. So that's not that far-fetched for me.
I wish I could have just stopped my plane and looked at it for a while, but you can't do that in an airplane. You know, you can't just stop and think about things. You got to whatever. But again, I was cooling engines off. I was descending, and I wasn't that far above the mountains that I was looking at. So what I seen was pretty distinct. I'm pretty sure there was two Bigfoots there. But anyway, that's here and there. What I do know is the one that made that sound that night is the one I saw. And that's what I, like I said before, if you don't see what made the sound, you don't really know what made the sound. So I ask a lot of people in my talks, how many here have heard a Bigfoot? And all these people raise their hands. And then I say, how many people have seen a Bigfoot? And a few people raise their hands. And I say, how many people saw a Bigfoot make the sound that they heard? No one raises their hand. It's something you really need to be careful. There's a lot of wild sounds out there that are not Bigfoot, but a lot of people want to think they are. They're looking for something so badly they want to assume that's a Bigfoot because they hadn't heard that sound before.
Right, and that's funny. I've heard a lot of audio over the years, and that people have sent into us or guests have brought. And in most cases, and I'm not an outdoorsy kind of guy, but in most cases, it sounds like coyotes or wolves or a bear growl, just from the sounds I recognize from TV, having watched enough TV and seen these animals interact and the night noises that they make. It seems to me, are you surprised too how many people bring you, raw, 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 and then you're like, oh my God, it's a Bigfoot. And you're like, no, dude, that's a wolf.
Every week I get some of those. You know, somebody, hey, is this a Bigfoot? I heard it. I'm not sure it's a Bigfoot, but they didn't see anything. You know, there's a guy in the Olympic Project up here. I live in Washington now.
Right.
I'm involved with the Olympic Project too. And one of the guys there, Dave, he's collecting the sound signatures of some of these reports that come in and see how they compare to a real coyote and see if they're different. Because even though they sound the same, they might look differently on a sound graph.
Right.
So that's what he does. And I got to put my hat off to him because that's a really good thing to do. A lot of people, if the signature matches, then it's probably a coyote. If it doesn't match, it's way above. Because that's the one thing I tell people, too, is it's the aptitude is what will give these things away. They have a huge lung capacity. And though they might imitate a coyote or imitate something else, the aptitude alone is going to can give them away. I know I was up there one time with my daughter, and we thought we were listening to an owl. I thought I would record it, and I turned my little recorder on, and the background noise, I had my speaker switch on, which is inadvertently, and it squealed a little bit, and that owl sound turned right into a Bigfoot chatter. So they were imitating the owl. So you get a lot of people who hear owls, but again, it's the aptitude that'll give them away.
Now, what about the comments, too, that, oh, well, you can tell this is a Bigfoot imitating a wolf or an owl or a whatever because of this. Do you really believe that they're out there pretending to be other animals just to trick humans in the way that they communicate?
Yes, they can do that. And, again, the sound graft showing their signature on something you can see will show the difference between them and a real coyote. And the Olympic Project's the only ones I know of that's doing that.
All right, we need to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more, and I want to discuss in depth your book, Quantum Bigfoot. What put you onto that path of science to start investigating? We'll do that when we return. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Beyond the Darkness. Welcome back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. The Quantum Bigfoot. That's the newest book out by our guest, Ron Moorhead. Ron is here to talk to us about this. Ron, this is interesting because there's been so many theories kind of pushed around about what is this creature? What does it do? Where does it come from? How does it manifest? Or it's there one second, gone the next. You can follow footprints in wet mud or snow, and then boom, they're just gone with no seeming way for them to vanish. Is that part of what really started you down this trek of looking at the quantum science and quantum physics of possibly what Sasquatch and Bigfoot are doing?
Yes, it is. Over the years, I've talked to so many people that's had all these strange reports, and we had some strange things going on up there, but we just figured, well, something we don't understand. But trying to figure out just what these things are all about, because we can't seem to find them and can't seem to establish them scientifically. So I know if you're going to, Al Berry had a master's degree in science, and he said, if you're going to stay credible, you got to stay with science. Well, he passed away a few years ago, but I'm really started heading in more deeply into quantum physics, because that's the science that really tells you how the universe works, how everything works. And it's not classical science in the way that, that Isaac Newton said everything is measurable, everything can be determined. Well, no, everything can't. Using classical science, that's all people can understand is what they can see with their eyes. But according to Einstein, Tesla, Bohr, all these physicists from 100 years ago, they realized that there's more going on than what meets our eye. There are other dimensions existing, and we only live in three and see in three. So there's at least 11, probably multitudes, but we don't know. The math of physics says that there's 11. So if these things are able to do that, and I've come to my own conclusion that there's something going on with that. I had to write this book, and I studied this physics for quite a while now. I'm not a physicist, but I definitely got a little bit of understanding. You'll never understand it because it's beyond our three-dimensional world. But how does it happen? How can just tracks disappear? I used to just throw those people aside when they tell me that. But I don't do that anymore because it happened to me just a few years ago at a campsite where my daughter saw one. And we went and found the trackway, and all of a sudden the tracks just stopped. And I looked all around. I'm not a dummy. I was looking for a rock it could have jumped to, a tree it could have climbed up, or anything like that. And no. And yet I've heard so many reports of this, of them disappearing. How does that happen? Well, quantum physics, there are rules in quantum physics that we just can get to the bottom of some of these questions we have. And one of them is everything is a vibration. Everything is energy. And that energy creates a vibration. And if you can raise your vibrational level to a certain degree, you won't be visible anymore to our 3D perception. And I'm wondering if maybe these things, through their vocal mechanism, can't do something like that, at least the ones we were dealing with in this area. And not all of these things, I don't believe, are the same. I do believe, when you get right down to it, I believe they're hybrids. I believe there's some type of alien intervention into a genome of a primate of some type. And I don't think they're all the same. I've been in Peru a couple times on expeditions down there with a couple scientists, and I've saw some of these enigmatic structures that have been done by past cultures that there's no explanation of how they do it. The big megaliths that are moved around, a lot of people have seen these things and know what I'm talking about, but those who haven't, gosh, they exist, and something that wasn't totally human caused that to happen. We found the skulls and remains of these elongated skulls that were not totally human, yet they were half human, part human, like the inbred or crossbred with the Incas or something. But I'm saying all that because I'm sold beyond a shadow of a doubt that aliens have been here. They could be here now, as far as we know. But if these things are a product of alien intervention into a genome of some type, and this goes back into Greek mythology, it gets back into the history of hybrids, basically, and demigods, half gods and half man, or half animal. And you see this in Greek mythology and all that. Is there a core of truth to all that, was my question. Well, yes, I think there could very well be, because if you get into quantum physics, you can see how this stuff can happen, and you can see how the universe really works, if you can possibly get a handle on quantum physics. If you think you understand it, that's when you're lost, because you never really will understand it, but right. At least you follow some of the math of it, you know, because the math dictates certain things, and people say, well, it's just a theory, quantum theory. Well, no, quantum theory is not just a theory. Like, you know, in classical science, you have to establish something. It has to be reestablished. It has to be confirmed by other scientists. Repeatable experiments has to be concluded, and the papers drawn up and accepted by the scientific community. It's not quantum physics. If you establish something mathematically in quantum physics, it has to be disproven mathematically in quantum physics, because you will never see it. You don't see how a microwave works. You just know that it works. You don't see how your cell phone actually works, but it works. Excuse me. Frog in my throat. anyway, it got me into this research and all that and trying to answer the questions. And I do believe I'm not a religious person, but I'm a spiritual person, so I think we all are spiritual beings, because according to Stephen Hawking, according to Einstein, according to all physicists, energy does not die. It just changes form. So when we leave these bodies, we change form. We turn into pure energy. And I think that's how aliens get here, is they somehow can change back into matter from not matter, just energy. And I get into all this in my book. I get into the pineal gland, how we're made as humans, how science and spirituality are really synonymous, at least quantum science is. Einstein said, science without religion is lame, religion without science is blind. Yet that has gotten totally away. Scientists now are in a paradigm box of believing that these things have to be in some type of ape out there in the woods, and that's what you have to find. Well, they're not finding them. Why not? There's more going on. And I can get into that, but the scientists that I talk with, I know how they think, and they're staying within their discipline. And their discipline is the Newtonian physics, which was created in 1687, I think it was. And they have to stay within their paradigm of thinking everything is measurable. You can find anything if it's out there. Well, no, you can't. You just can't find anything that's out there, because some things are outside of your perception. So I'm rambling on again, so just stop me, Dave.
No, you're not. Again, that's why we have you on, is I want to hear your thoughts on this and what's going on. You've got these beings being seen all over. They're there 1 minute, gone the next. There's been, you know, a lot of conjecture on the fact that they work like a sentry, that they have posted guards that will send the hoops, the hollers, the tree knockings, and they're constantly backing up or on a form of retreat. That's why people really rarely encounter them as a group. They'll see, you know, maybe one in passing, and it's a fleeting moment. Do you believe that there is just some natural stealth ability to these beings, or, you know, almost like a sense of hypnosis? Some of the people that we've spoken to and I've heard from over the years said that they'll see it and they know they should take a picture, but they can't, or they should take the shot, but they don't. And I wonder if there's some kind of mind communication, if there's some kind of general hypnosis in a weird sense that's being played out. And maybe they're still there. We're just suddenly no longer able to physically see them because of the way that our perceptions are working and their filters are covering.
I think you're right on it there, Dave. I get into one of my chapters called Quantum Entanglement, and that's how they can entangle you. Humans are all, we're all one. We're all one energy. We're just separated in these bodies. But our mind and our, that's how telepathy works. That's how all these psychics, what they get. We're all entangled in a way, and we just haven't learned how to read each other totally. Some of us do. But I think these things, they are part human. The mitochondrial DNA shows that they, at least the ones we had samples of, shows they are part human, half human. And the other half, they don't have not determined yet. You know, the nuclear side, which is the male counterpart. And that's where I get into the alien intervention. It's possible that that's what that is. But the quantum entanglement, that's how animals work. We got these brains on us stuck to our shoulders that just have a hard time understanding how much more there really is going on. But we have quantum entanglement within humans, and that's how some people can read minds. They're not reading minds, they're just entangling, like birds in a flock or a fish in a school. You see how they all move together. They're not talking to each other. They're entangled with each other. And I think if Bigfoot is part human, which I believe they are, they can entangle a human. I've been frozen in my tracks up there at our camp before. Me and Lewis, you know, Warren Johnson, we went up to where one of these things had to be behind this tree. We knew it was because we'd been sounding off. We jumped out of our shelter thinking we're going to see it run away or something. And we start walking up there, and we just froze like a Star Trek force field or something. And you got to wonder how that happens, because we weren't afraid of them at that point. We were trying to really see one. And so I brought that up to a scientist. He said, I don't want to hear about your fears. That's not scientific. I said, it wasn't fear. We weren't afraid. We just flat couldn't go forward any longer. And he looked at me. We're about 15 feet apart. We hadn't been talking. He said, I don't know about you, but I can't go anymore. I said, I can't either. So we went back. And we got back in the shelter, and things started sounding off again. I can't believe toying with us or something. But they can entangle your brain. And, of course, the scientist I told this to, he said it could have been infrasound or pheromones. Well, at that time, I found out pheromones only work within the same species, and these things are not the same as us, but maybe they are partially the same as us. Now I know that. But if it's infrasound, that can affect humans, but you won't hear it. So if infrasound was happening, then that's what it's laid onto now. A lot of times these people claim this stuff, and it's it could be infrasound, or it could be like you said, a little bit of hypnosis going on with it.
But maybe that's the way the infrasound is working. Maybe the infrasound is creating a dampening field, if you will, that's, you know, taking out of our visual spectrum their image.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, you know, they've been working on that kind of stealth technology since forever, right? By kind of bouncing sound waves and light waves and trying to, you know, alter the way we perceive things. So it wouldn't be hard to assume that maybe the reason they got onto that idea was because the government knows more about Bigfoot than they let on. Maybe it's that kind of stealthy technology of their universal being that has given us the insights on how to start looking into this science.
Well, these things are unique. I think the government knows a whole lot more than what they want us to know about this stuff. And because I know the technology is out there to discover if it was just plain physical being, I think they are a physical being. They have to live by our physical laws when they're in our three-dimensional world. And they can be shot, they can be hurt, they have to eat, they poop, they do everything we do when they're in our dimension. But can they transform out of our dimension, or are they just hypnotizing us to not see them when really they are, they're there? Or are they moving so fast, or can they transfer, be a vocal mechanism, into a vibrational frequency that we don't see? And we only see within a certain spectrum, our light spectrum, and in a three-dimensional world that we live in. And that's what our quantum Bigfoot's all about, is trying to get some of these questions answered through physics and through...
And for people that are rolling their eyes and trying to figure this out, you realize that sound has been used forever to distract people and cause all kinds of auditory. You can create hallucinations with sound. So it's not so far removed to believe that this type of normal stealth ability would be part of the animal structure. Because, again, you know, bats use infrasound and different versions of echolocation, dolphins. You know, there are many different creatures on our Earth that can emit sounds and perceive sounds that we cannot, that are able to help them in cloaking and in finding others like themselves. So it wouldn't be so far removed. And maybe it is the same type of technology that aliens use, that they're there 1 second, gone the next, but yet we still have that sense that there's something near us, something foreboding, because they're no longer part of our visual spectrum, but they are still close by.
Right. I think you're onto it there, Dave. Excuse me. I think that's how they move those big megalithic structures down in Peru and Bolivia, where I've seen I've been in Pumapuku, and I've been to these spots down there, which are just blow your mind to see the technology that had to be used by something, and it had to be alien, I think, technology, because I think it was done with sound vibration, and that's how they moved some of those things, which were quarried miles and miles away from where they are, and there's no timber at 13,000 feet where Lake Titicaca is, and yet all these boulders had to be moved for miles and miles, and how did they move that? They did it with sound frequency, I think. I think if we can develop and know, and I get into this too in my book, how spirituality and science goes together, I think that is how Jesus did his miracles, was through the laws of quantum physics, which are set up for the universe. And he tried to tell us, you can move them out and you can do this, you can raise people from the... How many of us are really walking on water nowadays? None of us. But that doesn't mean we can't, it just means we haven't learned how. And that's reconnecting with the oneness that we have, that we think we're all separate people, but we're not. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
No, but it's good. Good insights. Can I ask you about this? You know, there have been a lot of reports, and it's been one of the more popular functions of our show over the last year or two, talking more about the aggressive nature of some of these Bigfoot creatures. You know, for a long time, it seemed like they were just kind of this passive, gentle giant in the woods that once in a while we cross. And they're sighted. There's been more and more reports of attacks and stories like that that have taken place, aside from just the tree thumping and rock throwing, which seems more like a warning sign. There's been real attacks. Do you think that that's real, or do you think that's just the new trend in storytelling?
I think it's real. I don't think they're all the same. I mean, they're different species of them. And I think that's because of the alien intervention, because I think there's a war going on between good and evil. There are bad ones, and they're here to do bad. They're bad things that are here on Earth. But there's also the good ones. And I get into this in my book, too, how there's a cosmic war going on. I think we're doomed, or not doomed, we're set for a calamity one of these days. And you're going to think these things are going to come out of the woods. There's going to be good, and there's going to be bad ones. And you got to have your... Well, you got to have some knowledge about what's going on with them, because they're not all gentle giants. They are just some of them. They're just giants, and they can eat you. And but they're not, I don't think, at this point in time, allowed to interfere with humans. And that's gets into a deeper thing that I talk about in my book. But it's kind of interesting seeing how the big picture is. When I first encountered these things in the 70s, I wondered, first of all, where do giants come from? These things are giants. Where do they come from? And so I went to the Bible, actually, trying to find out more about what talks about giants. I couldn't find any books talking about giants, but the Bible talked about giants. They talk about alien intervention, and that's happened in Genesis 6-4. But you got to go a little further than that. I went to the book of Enoch, which talks about the specific shores of what giants were here for, how they got here. And it's fallen angels, they call it in the Bible, but it's really aliens. Just semantics there, but you got aliens messing with the genome and creating giants and creating different animals. They were just half dogs, half human, half whatever. It goes on and on. I talk too fast because my brain just mumbles all over this stuff. It's so interesting to me how it works, but how we have within ourselves the pineal gland. I've got a whole chapter of that in my book, how I think you've got to connect that with they call it the third eye. And if you can realize that that's where you can connect with the oneness that it's in all of us, it's through the pineal gland, which is in the middle of the head, called the third eye. And it's how you can really connect with the universe, how you connect with what's right and what's wrong. You just got to get the heart sending the right message to the brain, and the brain connected to the pineal gland. It kind of works like that, I think. But a lot of people can dig up on this stuff that we can't get into in our time here. But if you just Google it and don't roll your eyes or shove your head or turn the radio off necessarily, but just look into it. Don't put your head in the sand and think that it's just going to go away, because there's more going on than meets our perception. And that's it. Get into ghosts, you know. People think, well, I know there's ghosts out there. Well, there are these entities all over. They're just energy. They're everywhere. You don't see them with our eyes because they're out of our perception, but they're there. And I think a ghost, if you want to talk about ghosts, is just something whose vibrational frequency hasn't gotten big enough yet to get into the universal cosmos.
I want to delve into the idea that there may be different races and that there's different structures, the way these beings work. I'd also like to know if you've heard any true accounts that you believe were aggressive Bigfoot and what happened. Ron Moorhead, our guest, as we're talking about Bigfoot and discussing the quantum theory and science behind Bigfoot, possibly what they're doing that makes them so evasive and elusive. How are they able to do this? We were also talking about the aggressive nature, and you said that you believe that there are different species. So it's kind of like a bear, right? We've got grizzly, brown bear, panda bears. You've got all these different varieties. They're all of the same kind of genus, but there's different variations in the way that they are, and probably in the structure and how they were created shows their more like their aggressive nature or not.
Well, I talk to people about the bad ones that are out there, but the thing is, if they're really bad and these people are turning up missing and never coming back, you don't get their report, right? So what I tell people, right. If you go out there and one of them yanks your arm off, you know it's not a good one.
that's one of the litmus tests. If you extend your arm and it tears it off, you know.
Most people I talk to think they're just the gentle giants. They're all out there and they're there to help you. And I'm sure some of them are. I don't know for sure, but I think that probably there is a war going on between good and bad. And there are bad ones out there. So keep your guard up. Know who you are as a human being who has dominion on Earth. And once you tell them to go away, I think they'll go away. And in fact, that's happened to us up there a couple of times. And guys trying to sleep and these things are out there making their sounds, and one of them yelled out, "Shut up and go away," and it shut up and went away.
What can you tell me about some of the more aggressive stories? What are some of the stories you've heard where they've gotten a lot more aggressive or violent, perhaps, than other locations?
Well, you know, the most I've heard from people that I know are rocks being thrown at them, and that's thrown at them, not at them, but towards them, and it frightens them off. And I don't think they want to hit you, or they would have hit you. So I really don't have any reports, because the people who turn up missing or gone, they obviously can't report anything. So how do you know what's went on? I know people want to read about missing people. Well, they I don't know if it's got anything to do with Bigfoot, but a lot of people have turned missing around where our camp is. And that kind of lays the groundwork for a little bit more thinking on my part, I guess, when I go up there. But what I do know is they were not aggressive to us. They did not throw rocks at us. Well, I shouldn't say that. One time, one of the guys was coming in from a direction he normally don't come in from. And he has some big rocks the size of grapefruits being thrown over his head. And he didn't hear anything, but these rocks were being thrown by something with an opposable thumb. Bears don't throw rocks. And so then the one time Al Berry and I was on an expedition up in Northern California where these guys were saying they saw Bigfoot up there, that they'd come around this old mining camp they'd go into. So we drove miles, miles back on this dirt road, got back there, and that night, sitting around the fire, well, this rock comes whizzing by us. I mean, it was went by like the sound of an arrow going through the air and hit this tree by us. And about 30 feet up, we found the rock the next day and seen where it hit the tree. So that's about as aggressive as I've been around personally. Again, the ones that never turn up and you don't know what happened to them. You don't know if a Bigfoot got them or if they just wandered off and died or something else.
Do you suggest people, I mean, there's a lot of people now because of the advent of all the different shows and the popularity of the subject, want to go out in the field that have no experience. Me, I'm not an outdoors guy. I'm still fascinated, and I have some of your cohorts that are trying to talk me into going out there. I wouldn't mind going as long as I'm accompanied by someone like you that knows what they're doing. But what do you suggest for people that want to have an experience but are out there on their own or in a group that really has no outside presence before?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have tips that I give, and I'll give them free if anybody wants them, on what to look for, what to watch for, and how to be when these suck. A lot of it's given away in my first book, Voices in the Wilderness. Now, that comes with a CD, by the way, of the sounds. When you get to context of what I'm talking about, you can hear the sound that I'm referring to on the CD. It's all downloadable, too, on the website, ronmoorhead.com.
Right, and we'll have a copy of that link up on today's show as well, so you can find it very easily, folks.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of little telltale signs that'll tell you that maybe one of these things are around and what to do and what not to do. Because what not to do is more important. Some people jump up and shine a light, and some people take dogs with them. I don't recommend taking dogs at all because dogs can be aggressive. With something like that, and it's people have been known to have their dogs killed. In fact, we interviewed a guy. It's on my second CD of a Bigfoot Volume 2, and it's this guy 911 call is calling. It's actually a recording from him calling deputies when he had a sighting, and his dog had been killed 2 weeks before. He never found out how, but he knew that it went sailing over this fence and where it landed. Where he showed me where it landed was 35 feet away from where this fence was. So something had to really throw, I mean, something big had to, it was a big German Shepherd dog, wasn't some poodle. So something strong had to throw that thing that far. And it's just, there's some aggressive ones out there. And what to do and what not to do is very important. I give that in my PowerPoint presentation to it by Meets when I talk. So knowing that stuff is important. I have that in my book, by the way. I'm trying to push a book here.
No, I got you. But yeah, if you want to get more in depth with it and you want to do it, you should definitely educate yourself. Right. Talk to the people like this.
I think I got a lot of good stuff in this book that people, I think, and I get 5-star reviews on Amazon because you can find it on Amazon too. And I'm selling a lot of them. And I enjoy it now. It was a hard book to write. My first book, Voices Wilderness, was just my story. That was easy. I just wrote it because it's just what happened. And so I put a CD with that one. And it's a smaller book, but it's full of little telltale signs of these things. The second book here, Voices, Haunting Bigfoot, is a little more exhaustive because I quote a lot of scientists. I quote a lot of physicists that are involved in this dimensional stuff, and you know, it's not like me assuming certain things. I'm answering these questions with a scientific answer using quantum physics. But I encourage people to find this out. It's also, I think, available on a website, what to do and what not to do.
If somebody wants to, if you could just give us two tips, if somebody wanted to go into the woods to have the best opportunity to maybe have some kind of contact, what would be the top two things you'd recommend that they do?
Go on to one of these websites, like the BFRO.org, and find out where concentrated sightings have been. And don't tell anybody where you're going other than maybe your closest friends who won't tell anybody because you don't want other people involved. You want to get where people are not. These things, I think, are curious about people, but they don't habituate around people. They got their own places they stay. And I tell people to get into a remote area where it's not frequented by, you know, like around some lake or something, there's going to be other fishermen on the other side, but back where nobody else is, and then just be still. If they want to contact you, if you've got the right mental attitude, and that's important, by the way, is being of the right frame of mind. If you're going to go out there and try to get the money shot with a camera or get the shot with a gun or something like that, chances are they're going to read that in you and they're not going to come around. And you'll never see them if they don't want you to, unless it's just a pure accident. Like in the Patterson-Gimlin film, you know,
right.
They just happened to be there, just happened to be the right spot at the right time, and there you are.
So you do believe that the Patterson-Gimlin film is genuine?
Absolutely. You know, I know Bob pretty well, and I don't think he's lying. In fact, I'm sure I know him for years since he came through and seen me in 1978, I think it was. And he was fixing to make his mountain trek across the Sierras and on the John Muir Trail, I think, was on his horseback. And he was going to go through right through where we were, so where our sounds were, and where a lot of reports have been around the Yosemite, Tahoe, and that whole region in there. And go to where other reports have been, but again, go in with a clean attitude. Go in sober, go in not expecting anything, but be open to anything, because anything can happen. Anything from, and we've seen these balls of light come around our camp. We've seen, when I was up there 2 years ago, this light looked like a Star Wars light stick, what do they call those things, the sabers.
Right, the lightsabers, right.
lightsaber. It went floating by our tent. I mean, my gosh. I said, "What's that thing?" for several seconds. And, it was amazing. I mean, it's spooky. You don't know what's going to, if it's going to come in at you, what it is, what's all about, what's it doing. And then there's a light coming down from the hill. It looked like somebody with a headlight on, but there's no trail up there and no humans come in. It was like at midnight at night. And these things happen. So just be prepared. Chances are you're not going to get hurt, because I don't think they're allowed to interfere with humans at this time. That could change. It's what's going to happen. It's what I looked at too. Because biblically speaking, the Bible says, as it was in the day, Jesus said this, as it was in the days of Noah, so should also be the second coming. Well, I started looking at the days of Noah. And this is what was happening. You had giants here. You had the alien intervention. You had aliens offering humans advanced technology. When you see that happening again, when you see aliens offering us advanced technology, that's the science of the last times of our time box we're in. The time, I get into a whole chapter on time. You have to excuse me. I get excited about this. But
no, that's why we want you on the show.
As we relate it, as we think of it, like yesterday, today, and tomorrow, this is going to be hard to swallow, but it doesn't exist. And if you get into the energy field and understand a little bit about physics, you find out where time is different. And so we experience time in our own world. It doesn't experience that way in the universe. Just saying.
Good stuff. Ron, thank you so much. It's great to catch up with you. Hopefully we don't have to wait another 3 years to do it again.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave. I apologize a little bit for muddling so much, but got a frog in my throat this morning.
That's
fine. Working too fast.
You've been doing great. We love having you on, and it's great catching up with you. We'll have a link up to Ron's website so you can get his books, his audiobooks, the downloadable versions. It's all there and available for you. That's it for today. We'll be back Friday, and we'll have a brand new edition of the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio, plus a frightening new encounter on Theater of the Mind.